Okay. Let's go. If I'm not mistaken, we were in chapter 18. I'll bring you up to date with everything. We were in chapter 18, Pasuk 19.
Yeah,
exactly. You see how I remember? I'm so amazed. Chapter 18, Pasuk 19. What has happened up until this point is, for all intents and purposes, the battle in the field is over. Avshalom is dead. Avshalom had been hanging from the tree and he was run through by Yoav and those who surrounded him. Back in Pasuk 17 it said, Vayikot Avshalom, they took Avshalom, Vayashlichu Oto Bayar, they threw him into the in the forest, into a big hole. Vayatzipol of Galavanim Gadol Miyodim, they just threw his body into an open area pit in the forest, and they covered it with stones. The Chol Yisrael Nosu Ishla Olav, and all of Israel, each man fled to his tent. That means Israel has simply fled from the field of battle. The struggle is over. Yes. Yes. It was.
Does that make it
in the Shemayim
clear that you had?
And I'll tell you. You're right. Because he was despised, he was hated. That's right. No esoteric kind of reasons that it was done. He was despised, he was hated, he was the enemy, the one who rebelled against his father. These are very natural, normal. I'm even going to go one step further. Correct emotions. This man rebelled against his father David. This is a man who brought death. I don't know how many people died. Wait, say how many people died in the battle. 20,000 Jews fell in battle. So what do you think they're supposed to do with his body? Maybe they should give him a 21-gun salute and a royal funeral. It's exactly what he deserves. By the way, there is no indication that his body was ever removed from there for kvura, for burial elsewhere. That may be of peripheral significance, but it does have. Huh? Absalom's tomb. You see, because the next pasuk says, yes, Avshalom lakach vayatzav lo b'chayav et matzevet asher ben mekabelach. Avshalom had taken and he had made in his lifetime a matzevet, a memorial of sorts, asher ben mekabelach, which is in the Valley of the King. Ki omar ein lidem, because he said, I have no son, pavur haskir shemi, so that my name should be remembered. Vayikro lo matzevet al shemo, he called this great memorial al Shemo Vayik on his own name, and he called it Yad Avshalom Adayam Azeh, which is there, Adayam Azeh. What I'm saying is, we have no indication that he's buried there. It doesn't say that he was buried there. The building is Yad Avshalom. What is significant, and this we're going to see in other psukim later, this is a peripheral significance. It's just that I'm working on this, and you know, when you learn Torah, you study one thing, and it relates all of a sudden to something else. We're going to get back again soon to one of David's allies. There were a number of people who acted with great loyalty. One of them was Barzillai HaGiladi. Barzillai from Gilad. David is going to ask him, come live in Yerushalayim and be from amongst those who will eat at my table daily in Barzillai. Giladi refused. Nana, he says, he's too old, he's going to remain in Gilad. Remember, Gilad is on the other side of the Yarden. Where is Avshalom buried? Where did the battle take place? The battle took place on the other side of the Yarden. Now, what I happen to be working on this morning is what is the status of Eder HaYarden in Halacha, as well as what is the status of the Golan in Halacha. Are the Golan and Eivor Hayarden, are they part of biblical Eretz Yisrael, are they not part of biblical Eretz Yisrael? Let me put you at ease, they are part of biblical Eretz Yisrael, but you have to prove it. I mean, and this is a biblical opinion, not a political opinion. But what's interesting, I saw one of the Mefarshim says, take a look, nobody ever bothered to make certain, even David didn't make certain, to have Avshalom brought for burial in what would have been called Eretz Yisrael proper. Barzillai, who remained out in Gilad, died out in Gilad, and he remained there. Now if Abraham, if the other side of the Jordan is not part of Eretz Yisrael proper, they should have had a Malon Bakodesh society, you understand, who within 24 hours can make sure that one's body can be brought for burial across the Yarden. There was no such thing. Why was there no such thing? Because Eivor HaYarden also has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. In Halacha, we may have to talk about it at some later point, there is a difference in the level of sanctity. Just as there is a difference in the level of sanctity in what we would call Eretz Yisrael proper between Yerushalayim and the rest of Eretz Yisrael, there is a difference between one side of the Jordan and the other side of the Jordan, and mainly with regard to, well, one thing, that Shechina, Migdash or Mishkan cannot be on the east side of the Jordan. They have to be on the left side of the Jordan. On the west side of the Jordan. That's left, yeah, depending which way
left
you stand.
On the map.
Yeah, on the map.
But Moshe was buried in the east.
And Moshe, very good. Moshe Rabbeinu himself is buried.
He wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael.
But the fact that he wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael does not mean that he is buried outside of Eretz Yisrael. Because remember, at the beginning of Sefer Devarim, when he indeed prays to God to be permitted to enter, so Rashi explains that, why does he pray? Because since he had already been involved in the conquest of the lands of Sichon and Og, and Sichon and Og are part of Eretz Yisrael, so therefore he assumes that maybe God has changed his mind. And those are the precise words of Rashi, because he conquers Sichon and Og. And Sichon and Og became the land of God and Reuven. Alright, but that was just a passing aside. Alright. The important thing is the rebellion is over. The Achimatz ben Tzadik Omar. Pasuk 19. Achimatz, the son of Tzadik, said, Orutzono va'avasres hamelech. I want to run and let the king know the news, kishefoto Hashem miyad yavov, that God has judged him from the hands of his enemies. Vayomelo Yav said to him, Lo ish besorata hayom, I said, you are not a man who's bringing good news today. You're not a man to bring news today. Ubisarta biyom acher. On some other day, you will be the one who'll bring the news. Vayom azel lo tabas, today you should not bring the news. Ki al kain, because indeed Ben HaMelech made. There's a cloud, there is a pallor over the day. The cloud, of course, is that the king's son is dead. Yes, the rebellion is crushed. David can now return to Yerushalayim, which is, of course, a tremendous, tremendous victory. But there's a cloud over the day. Vayomer Yoav laKushi. So Yoav said to the Kushi, Leich haged laMelech asher ra'ita. The Kushi was indeed somebody from Kush who was a servant, to the king. He says, Leich haged laMelech, go and tell the king asher ra'ita that which you saw. Vayishtachu Kushi liYoav, the Kushi buried, bowed down before Yoav, by Yorotz, and he ran. By Yosef, Od Achimad ben Tzadok, by Yomer Yoav, Achimad ben Tzadok said again to Yoav, V'yehima, I don't care what it is you say, or Rutzo Nagam Oni, I'm also going to run, Acharei HaKushi, after the Kushi. By Yomer Yoav, Loma Zata Rodz Bini, Yoav said, why are you running, my son? Ulecha Ein B'sora Motzei, there is no news that you find to tell. There's nothing special for you to tell. The news will already be told by the Kushi. Achimat says, V'yihima. I don't care what. Let come what be, or Rutz, I'm going to run. Vayomalo, so he said to him, Yov told him, Rutz, run. Vayoratz Achimatz derech hakikor, vayavoret hakushi. Achimatz ran derech hakikor. Kikor is imagine the plain or the valley, huh? And Vayavar et HaKushi, even though the Kushi had started earlier, and it seems Derech HaKikar was a longer road, the Kushi went through the forest, which was a shortcut. He took the longer road, but he was a quicker runner, so he was able to pass the Kushi. The David. There was a Kushi that is referred to in Yirmiyahu. There is a Kushi. There's even a place where Shaul is referred to as a Kushi. There was a Kushi who was a servant to King Tzidkiyahu. Whether he's Jewish or he's not Jewish, I don't know. I imagine he certainly had to accept upon to be a servant who lived in Eretz Yisrael. He had to be one who accepted upon himself the seven Noahide mitzvahs. He had to. Kushi, yes, an Ethiopian. There weren't any Ethiopian Jews then. Yeah, I understand. This is a real Ethiopian. Right? Like we call the Russian Jews Russians, you understand? There they were Jews and here they're Russians. But then it was the time before Ethiopian Jews, they were Ethiopian. The David Yoshev Ben Shnei Asharim, and David was sitting between the two entrances, the two gates. In other words, he's at the city. He's at the city of Machanayim, and there's an inner gate and an outer gate, and he's between the two gates. Vayelech Hatzofer Gagashar, the lookout, went to the roof of the gate El Hachoma upon the wall. Vayisa Adenav, he lifted his eyes. Vayani Sovihine Ish Rots Levadoi, behold, a man is running alone. Vayikra Hatzofer, the lookout called. Vayagin Lamelech, and he told the king. Vayomer Amelech. The king said, "In levado, if he comes alone, besorah b'fiv, then in his mouth he carries news." Vayelech aloch the kadev, and he continued going and drew closer. Vayad hatzofe ish acharatz, and then the lookout sees another man who's running. Vayikra hatzofel hashoer, the lookout called to the man in charge of the gate. Vayomer, and he said, "Hine ish rots levado, behold, a man." Another man is running along. By Yomer HaMelech, so the king said, Gamzem Vaser, this one is also bringing news. By Yomer HaTzofer, the lookout said, Ami Roet Merutzat HaRishon, Kemerutzat HaChimadz Ben Tzadok. I see the way the first one is running. It looks like the running of Achimadz, the son of Tzadok. By Yomer HaMelech, the king said, Ishtovze, he's a good man. Ve'el Besorat Tovar Yavo, he will bring good news. By Yikra Achimadz, Achimatz called out by Yomer. In other words, probably he begins referring to the king as he's running up to him. By Yomer al Amelech Shalom, by Yishtak al Amelech Laapavarza, and he bowed down before the king to the ground. By Yomer, and he said, Baruch Hashem Elokecha, blessed is God your God, Asher Sigeret Hanashim, Asher Nosu Et Yadam, Ba'adoni Amelech. God has handed over to you those who had lifted their hand against my master the king. By Yomer al Amelech, the king said, Shalom lana'ar l'avshalom. There is peace to the boy Avshalom. A number of times already, David has referred to him as na'ar, though he is not na'ar. He's a grown man. Some of the Mepharshim say that the reason for this is, in a sense, he is not justifying, but he wants to diminish the extent of the crime of Avshalom. By referring to him as a nar, young, he's impetuous, it was something that he did because of his youthfulness. Vayomer Achimatz doesn't want to answer that question. Doesn't want to answer the question. So he says, Ra'iti hehamon ha-gadol, I saw a great mass of people, lishloach et eved hamelech Yoav v'et avdechot, a whole group of people over there, to send your servant, the king Yoav, and Avdecha, and your servant. In other words, they were there as they were deciding who they should send. V'lo yadati mavet, I don't know what this whole gathering of people was all around. Incidentally, I tried to translate this pasuk, but I didn't really do a good job. The pasuk, huh? It's a very hard pasuk to translate. Why? But you know why it's a hard pasuk to translate? Because the fact is, you have to understand. Achimatz is trying to get out of something.
Something.
Something, precisely.
and
he doesn't want to tell a lie, and he doesn't want to tell the truth. He only planned on telling the king one thing, that the war is over and he won. That's it. But the beauty of the pasuk is its confusion. I translated it, but I saw a lot of people. Lishloach et Eved HaMelech Yoav, to send the servant of the king Yoav bet Avdecha. Who's this servant of the king? Who's he referring to? To send Yoav? Who's sending Yoav? But I say intentionally, the pasuk is confused. So therefore, if I did a bad job translating it, it's not my fault. It's the pasuk's fault. Because he is in a state of mind that he's funfing, or he's trying to get out of an extremely tight situation. So the king said, Sov, turn aside, hit Yatsevko, stand here. Vayisov, he turned, Vayamod. And he stood there. In other words, he's not hardly standing facing the king. Now the king wants him out of the way because somebody else is coming. Vihine Akushi, and behold, the Kushi came. Vayomer Akushi. The Kushi said, Yitbaser Adoni HaMelech, that my master, the king, should be told, Shifatcha Hashem Ayon, God has judged you today, Miyad Kol HaKamim Alecha, from the hands of all of those who rose against you. God did justice today. That's what he did. Vayomer HaMelech al HaKushi, HaShalom LaNa'ar LaAvshalom. There's a difference. There's a difference between the way he speaks to the Kushi and the way he spoke to Achimatz. In Pasuk 29, when he spoke to Achimatz, he did not ask a question. Vayomer HaMelech, take a look at Pasuk 29 again. Vayomer HaMelech, the king said, Shalom lanar la'avshalom. The boy Avshalom is okay, everything's all right with him. He's making a statement. He doesn't even want to ask it like a question, because asking it as a question already raises the possibility that maybe something has gone wrong with the boy Avshalom. David doesn't even want to consider that possibility. So he makes a statement, and he's hoping for confirmation. Huh? Well, I don't know, but... He's afraid to hear, yes, he's afraid to hear. So therefore, he says, all right, denial, let's call it denial. So he therefore said, Shalom lana'ar la'avshalom. There is peace to the boy Avshalom. But he's gotten this confused answer. When he now speaks to the Kushi in Pasuk 32, he says, Ha-shalom lana'ar la'avshalom. There's a difference, there's aha. Is there peace to the boy Avshalom? Is Avshalom okay? In other words, there are doubts in his mind now. In other words, he understood the confusion. He understood the confusion that was going on. If Achimatz thinks that he was able to cover up completely, he did not succeed. He certainly has already sowed the seeds of doubt in the mind of David, and therefore he now asks the question. Vayomer HaKushi, the Kushi said, Yil Hanar Oyvei Adoni HaMelech. Like that boy shall be all of the enemies of my master the king, and all of those who have risen up against you to do evil to you. Yes. Yes. I mean, he doesn't, he could have said it, he should have said it in a, in some other way. No, it's not a terrible thing. Let all of, what happened to your son should happen to all of the enemies of the king. That's not so terrible. That's not so terrible. I mean, if he would have simply said, he could have said, I'm mitzta'er. I'm really sorry to say, but unfortunately, Avshalom is dead. I mean, that's one way to have said it. I mean, whichever way the news would have been broken to David, it would have brought about what his reaction is going to be. But I understand the Kushi. Avshalom, as we said a few moments ago, Avshalom was nearly the destruction of Klal Yisrael. 20,000 people lost their lives because of him. the Cushi, who doesn't have the problem of being his father, can say it as it is. Vayirgaz HaMelech. Vayirgaz HaMelech. Now, the word Vayirgaz, I think we have to be careful how we translate the word Vayirgaz. Sometimes Vayirgaz is used, as anger. That's how it means here. Moved, shaken, trembling. In other words, it doesn't necessarily have to mean anger. I think we may sometimes confuse it with the word beroges, which of course is a similar shoresh, a similar root, but vayirgaz. Pasuk in Tehillim that
trembled.
Rigzu va'al techeto imru bilavavchem al mishkavchem v'domuzot. Rigzu va'al techeto. Does rigzu va'al techeto mean be angry and don't sin? No. Rigzu means you should be shaken or you should be moved and therefore not sin.
Well,
there must be a relationship between the two. Yes, I would imagine the relationship between the two is both of them represent anger can also shake a person. We don't begin to shake with anger. I do. Quite an admit. I feel like I'm shaking. The very rare occasions when I get angry, like when I read the paper every morning, right? So you shake. What do we say in Oz Yashia? Well, so you had mentioned the pasuk. That's in Hallel. But in Oz Yashia, by the end of Oz Yashia, Here. It had better be there. Shamu Amin, very good. Shamu Amin Yirgozun Chil Ochaz Yoshvei Feloshet. It's talking about the nations of the world heard about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the Exodus, and about the splitting of the Red Sea. Shamu Amin Yirgozun Chil Ochaz Yoshvei Feloshet. Now watch. Oz nivhalu elufei Edom eleimo of yochazemo road nomogu kol yoshvei Kenan. All of these are describing the reactions of the various nations as they hear of God's great works. So eleimo of the mighty ones of Moab yochazemo road, they were gripped with trembling. Yoshvei Kenan, the inhabitants of Canaan melted. Chil ochaz yoshvei ploshet. Chil is also pain. The people of ploshet, pain. Shamu amim yirgozon, therefore, can't mean that the peoples of the nations heard and they got angry. Yirgozon means trembling. Vayirgaz hamelech. I just wanted to make certain that we don't make the mistake here of translating it as anger. Vayirgaz hamelech. In other words, he's trembling, he's shaking because of his pain, his tzar, the avelut.
Thank you.
Vayal al aliyat hashar vayevken, he went up to the top of the gate and he cried, the chalam abba lechto, and so he said as he went, b'ni avshalom, b'ni avshalom, mi tein muti ani tachtecha, my son avshalom, My son, Avshalom. This is one of the painful psukim of Tanakh. Mi peinuti ani tachtecha. If only I would have been able to die instead of you. Avshalom, b'ni, my son, Avshalom. He's going to say b'ni 8 times. And Chazal tell us that the 7 times were to bring Avshalom out of the 7 depths of Gehenna, and the 8th one was in order to bring him to Olam Haba.
Vayugad liYoav, and it was told to Yoav, Hinei HaMelech Boche VaYitabel Al Avshalom. They tell Yoav, behold, the king is crying and he's mourning over Avshalom. Vatehi Hatshua Bayom Ahu LeEvel L'Chol Ha'am. The great salvation that day turned into a day of mourning for all of the people. On that day, the people heard saying, "Ne'etzav Hamelech al Beno." The king is depressed. He's unhappy about his son. Here is a day that should have been a day of great rejoicing, and as far as the people are concerned, it's no longer a day of rejoicing. It has turned into a day of mourning. Vayidganev ha'am bayom ahu lavo ha'ir. What a beautiful word. Zom zecharan gegamvet. In Yiddish, it's a beautiful. It's translated so beautifully. They entered the city stealthily on that day. They did not come back from the field of battle like the victorious, brave, courageous soldiers. In a sense, with shame and with embarrassment, they snuck stealthily into the city. Kasher yitganev ha'am hanichlamim bin samta milchama, and the pasuk describes it precisely. Leaves nothing open for your imagination. Everything is said. They came in like an ashamed and embarrassed people who fled from the field of battle. Those who flee and run from the field of battle, so they're going to come back into the city. They're going to come back into the city. Arangam v'nizich stealthily. Here, the day of victory turned into a day of shame and embarrassment. V'hamelech lo'at et panav, and the king covered his face. Vayizak hamelech kol gadol, and the king cried out with a great cry, "Bni Avshalom, Avshalom, bni, bni, my son Avshalom, Avshalom, my son, my son." Tata remains a tata. The tragedy was a profound one. Doesn't he in some way feel that he may be at fault? Aren't all of these prakim, the last seven prakim, aren't they the story of what comes as a result of his indiscretion with Bathsheba and Uriah Achiti? Isn't that what Natan HaNavi had told him, that Yokum Alecha Ro'a Mi Beitcha, there is an evil that will arise upon you from your home, from your own home? In some sense, he must carry guilt. If he would not have done what he did, all of these tzavas, and look what they've now added up to. First, there is the child with whom Bathsheba is pregnant. She loses the child. Amnon rapes Tamar. Amnon is killed 2 years later by Avshalom. The rebellion of Avshalom. We were talking about a tremendous amount of pain and suffering that David HaMelech has gone through. Good question. Her question was, why, what's so special about the relationship between David and Avshalom, and we didn't hear that in the relationship between Amnon and David. David doesn't cry over Amnon the way he cries over Avshalom. You know, I never thought of the question. And let's, yeah, I wanted to say that, but I was afraid to say it. I'm happier that you said it. I'll tell you. Precisely all of the characteristics that made Avshalom capable of mounting a rebellion against his father. What were they? We once discussed them. His beauty. There was nobody as beautiful as him. His charisma. He must have been bright, beautiful, charming, but to the point that he is able to take a people and bring them in rebellion against his own father. Precisely all of those qualities are the qualities that that captured and captivated David. The man had something. If anything, most probably David saw him as the one from whom he was going to have a lot of nachas. You understand? This is going to be his nachas. Yes, the wasted potential. What he could have been. What he could have been. But it certainly was his conceit. Abnormal, well, conceit and pride and an ego that was a swollen, overgrown ego. That's what Avshalom really was. But he had qualities that made him unusual and unique, and most probably David HaMelech. If I would want to become a shtickle psychologist, you know, and I'm always frightened of doing that, becoming trying to look at it. I'll say it anyway, but with the introduction, what was the relationship between David and his family? Was he the odd man out? He was the one who was forgotten by his father and looked down upon by his brothers. Don't you think he longed and he yearned for some kind of recognition, at least as an equal member of the family? And here he sees his own son Avshalom. His own son Avshalom is the charmer of the family. He's the personality. Avshalom has what David did not have as a child. As an adult, he didn't have it. I don't know whether there was a period of time in his life when David, well, I guess one brief period, when he was adored by the crowds. It was a very, very brief period from the time that he killed Goliath and became the son-in-law of Shaul. When the women said Shaul has killed thousands and David tens of thousands, he was the object of love. And in that one chapter it says Michal loved him, Chol Ha'om, all of the people loved him. I think in that chapter was chapter 18, four times the term love is used to describe David. The feelings of people toward David, it was a feeling that he did not have before that in his father's house, and I wonder whether he had it afterwards, because immediately after that chapter 18, where everybody loves him, he becomes a fugitive for years. He flees from one place to the next in order to get out of the way of a Shaul who wants to kill him. And Michal makes fun. There's so many things that happened then. And here he takes a look at an Avshalom, and Avshalom has everything, really everything going for him. Those things that he didn't have. Despite the fact, of course, that the Pasuk had described him as a good-looking boy. But Avshalom, his whole bearing is... I don't know. And then, of course, there's always the mistake that we make, and I always think of David as short. Why do we always think of David as short? Yeah, because of all of the pictures of David and Goliath. I mean, it might very well be that David was 6 foot tall. I don't know, but somehow I get this feeling that David is always small. But he was the youngest. Yeah, you know, Avshalom had awesome potential, and the potential, it's all gone. Not only wasted, it brought down so many people. You know, what should I... So, what do you want to say? But he mentions his name quite a bit too. I think if you're going to add them up, Avshalom, he mentions Avshalom, Absalom, my son, Absalom, Avshalom. But I believe we have to give more thought to it yet. It's not. I mean, this is at least the approach that occurs to me now. The difference between his relationship to Amnon and his relationship to Avshalom. Is it also the possibility that there was something he felt so ugly about what Amnon had done?
But he didn't feel that way about himself, and what he was doing to the country and the people. Avshalom.
No, I'm talking about how David felt.
Yeah, he didn't feel that way about Absalom in terms of the insurrection.
But if he did to his own daughter.
But she was sort of part of the right. Okay, listen. I think it's a question to think about, and therefore all that I said is what came to mind first. The fact that Absalom was a very, very special person. He was a captivating one. And precisely what made him so charming and such a leader to others did the same thing for David. And then again, of course, as I said, the fact that he feels in some way he is guilty about it all. And remember, there wasn't a complete absence. Wait a minute. What does he do after the death of Amnon? He banishes Avshalom. Banishes Avshalom, B'ni Avshalom, he banishes. And it takes the great efforts of Yoav, who brings a woman from Tekoa to the what he has to go through in order that Avshalom should be permitted back. You remember the whole barrack over there, what Yoav had to go through, just in order to maneuver things, that David should agree to take Avshalom back. And even when Avshalom comes before the king, so it says he kisses him, and then he refuses to see him ever again.
Maybe because he's older now than he
is. Who's older?
Older?
You know, I have a feeling that his separating himself from Avshalom was very painful to him. I think he felt that he had to do it. Is he not going to demonstrate his extreme displeasure with Avshalom? Avshalom has killed a brother. He's implicated. He has allegedly killed his brother. David took a strong position with him. He really banished him. Banished him. There you had it that... you remember? Huh? The end of Yud Gimel? What did I say? Yeah, then it's at the end of Yud Dalet that he finally brings him, back. These are very, 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 very difficult and very complex relationships. All right. Vayavo Yoav El Hamelech Habayit. Yoav came to the king in his house. Vayom, and he said, you embarrass today the face of all your servants, the ones who saved your life today, and the lives of your sons and your daughters, and the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines. He keeps repeating the word nefesh in order to say so many lives were saved today by these people who went out to do battle, and you shame them, you embarrass them. And you know what you demonstrated today? To love your enemies, and to hate those who love you. By your conduct today, you said today, you don't have offices, you don't have servants, because I know today, if Avshalom would be alive and all of us today would be dead, it would have been good in your eyes. It's a strong
courage.
It takes courage. I'm happy that you used the word courage. You could have used another word. What other word could you use? Chutzpah. Worse than chutzpah. But you used the word courage. Because I think that if we stop to think, if we stop to consider what's happening over here, Yoav is absolutely right. And it takes tremendous courage for him to do it. Why is he able to do it? Relative, but remember, we spoke about what it is that motivates Yoav. What's Yoav's whole life? David, Malchus based David. his whole being is bound up with the royal house of David, and therefore he is the one who will protect and defend the Malchus regardless of what price he has to pay. He will kill if it means that he is defending the house of David, and he does kill. He killed Avner ben Ner in cold blood because he held that Avner ben Ner, he may have been wrong, but he held that Avner ben Ner was a threat to Malchus peace. He killed him. He feels that David's conduct is conduct that is going to undermine everything that the Malchus peace David stands for. Va'ata now, kum tsei v'taper alev avodecha. Get up and speak to the hearts of your servant. This is already, I'm not going to use the word chutzpah here, but he's commanding David. I don't think nobody could have ever spoken to David the way he spoke to him now. Ki bashem nishbati, because I've sworn by God, ki ein chol yotzei, I mean, if you think you've heard it bad, wait till now. I've sworn, ki ein chol yotzei, if you don't go out, im yolin ish itcha halayla, no man will remain with you tonight. We are all going to abandon you.
This is the echo of the story of Uriah staying with the camel.
All right, I'm trying to let that sink in over here. I don't know what to do with it. So I'm going to have to let it sink a little more. I'm going to have to let it...
Reminded me of it right away.
I understand. There's an association. He
wouldn't leave him. And here, no one will stay with him.
No one will stay with him. V'ra'a l'chol zot, this evil will be so bad to you, mikol ha'ra'a sheboi l'ata, minur echad ata. From your youth until now, all of the evil that has come upon you. By the way, when he says this, do you know what's understood? That a great deal of evil has befallen David from his youth until that day. And I think when it says, when he uses minu urecho ad ayom azeh, it may very well be proof to those mefarshim who want to say that the rebellion of Absalom took place in the last year of David's reign. He's 70 years old, and it's the 40th year of his reign. Because minu urecho seems to, you know, from the very beginning of your career till, you know, what may very well seem to be the, you know, the waning months or years of your reign. I don't think anybody in Tanakh speaks as strongly to anybody else as this statement here. Certainly, no one to a melech speaks the way Yoav speaks there.
Contrast this later on with Natan coming to him with Shalom with Bathsheba, the way he does the backhand and. And you go and tell a story, and then I'll go tell a story. None of this
very,
direct confrontation.
Very good comparison. When Natan the prophet comes to David to give him Musa, he tells him this whole story about the rich man, the poor man, the shepseller, and only at one point does he say, "Atoha ish, you are the man." Over here, we're talking about a completely different relationship. Yoav sees at this moment, he sees the fall and the dissolution of Malchus Beis David, and he says he has not devoted his entire life to preside over the dissolution of Malchus Beis David.
What interests me is that Yoav is not known as a Navi, and yet this language is exactly the kind of language you would expect from a Navi.
Well, let's see, I mean, there's a threat over here also. Nevi'im, I don't know if they threaten. He threatens him, if you're not going to listen to me, then I've sworn nobody's going to be here with you.
No, but the point I'm trying to make is that a Navi tells a king or a leader or whoever what he says because he has a message from God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you expect then strong language, right? Here, it doesn't say that this message is from God. This is Yoav speaking, and Yoav saying that he swore before God. He doesn't say God told him.
No, for sure not. No.
For sure not.
This is all Yoav's initiative.
Yoav, exactly, but yet his language is at least as strong, if not stronger, as any Navi's language.
All right. Yes, I agree with that. Now, the next pasuk. I'm going to ask a question about the next pasuk. It says, "Vayakom Melech, the king got up, Vayeshev Bashar, and he sat in the gate." That means he comes out. Sort of, it's like he's coming out publicly, out onto the mirpeset, you know, to see the people. And to all of the people they said so, saying, "Hine, behold, Hamelech Yoshev Bashar." The word spread, "Behold, the king has come out." And all of the people came before the king. V'Yisrael nos ish li ohalav, and Yisrael, each man had fled to his tents. Huh? Yeah, I thought you would have asked something else. This was already said before. In chapter 18, pasuk 17. Chapter 18, pasuk 17. One of the pasukim that we began with today, the first pasuk we began with. The Chol Yisrael Nosu Ish LaOhalav. All of his, this is repeated again now. Why is it repeated? And what is the context here? Furthermore, I'm asking you, I'm putting you to work now. What is it that prompts the king? Now, it means he's listened carefully to Yoav. Is there any way for us to know what it is that indeed motivates him to come out? Is it the threat? Is it possibly that he sees the wisdom of what Yoav says? Is it because he realizes, yes, he has acted in a way that is unbefitting a king toward his servants? The last two. You're not ready to accept the first. The first being that it's the threat that moves him.
I don't think it's the threat. I think it's that the threat made him realize what Yoav says at the beginning, that he is loving his enemies and hating his loyal servants.
So I'm just asking, is
talking with the general, he's very concerned about the loss of not only his warriors, but their family, the time that Amalek came down and
you're right that he
and feeding the men and making sure he knows what it's like to be in battle and to go out to battle for someone. And I think it was basically, you know, putting the first, the people that went out and risked their lives for him. I think what Yoav did was shock effect, but for him to get him out of the shock of what he heard.
He doesn't do everything Yoav asks him to do. He doesn't speak. Can't bring himself to do that. Just goes out.
I think
he just appears before them.
I think that what Yoav said to him made him realize that he was giving into his emotions and he wasn't thinking for it.
You see, I always like to find. I was hoping we could find something in the pasuk. Maybe. Maybe I'm reading too much into the word Vayakom. Vayakom HaMelech Vayeshev Bashar. Let's look at those four words again. I mean, he gets up and he sits down. What does it mean?
He
said
he shouldn't.
Yeah, alright. So he gets up from his Avelot. That's true. Vayakom can mean he gets up from his Avelot. The word Vayakom can also mean that he is rising to the occasion. If we're talking about him rising to the occasion, it could not be the result of a threat. When one responds to a threat, do you know what one what's happening? One is surrendering. Some other word would have to have been used. When you simply fold before the onslaught of a Yoav,
the word Vayakam doesn't apply. Vayakam represents so much more than Vayakam doesn't mean that he stood up. If you wanted to say he stood up, you would have said Vayamod.
But it also could be that what she was saying before. He was shaken out of this tremendous grief.
All that I'm saying is, I'm saying that the Vayakam represents an emotional and a psychological
awakening,
standing up, gathering his strength. There is something in the word Vayakam, because the word Vayakam, I'm saying, does not describe going from a position of none Vayakam to Vayakam. That's what it means. If it would have meant, if all that we're describing is something physical, that he was sitting and he got up, so it would have said Vayamud. And furthermore, he gets up for what purpose? To sit in the gate. And it says by now. Is that what it says there? Take a look at the meaning of Chayasara. Vayakam Avraham me al pene meto. So I'm saying, yeah, very good. No, she didn't say that. You said that. That's very good. So what I'm saying is that the word, and even over there when it says it by Avraham, it doesn't mean he was sitting and he got up. Vayakam represents a frame of mind. And when it says Vayakam HaMelech, it's the melech in him that's getting up. If we would have been talking about a man who gets up from Shiva, so that's something very, very personal. That has nothing to do with his malchus, that it would have said Vayakam David. Vayakam HaMelech means that there is a surge in him of malchus, and he sees his responsibility as a melech. And he recognizes that what Yoav said was correct, and therefore he sits down to Shara Melech. Yes.
After the baby died,
because
Vayakam doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't say Vayakam.
I was right. I forgot that pasuk. That I was right. I said this now on my own. Zara. Oh, my day is made. It's been a depressing one all day until now. Oh.
That's all that takes, Rabbi
Gold.
Every morning I
should be. Oh, no, this is so good. No, there's another thing. I'm also lucky. What happens if Woody said by Yochum HaMelech over there? That's beautiful. So then what I thought is correct. If we're talking about one who rises from his own personal grief, the term that would have been used is David. And it's David. But by Yochum HaMelech, Malchus rises. And if Malchus rises, it could never have been because of surrender to a threat. Because that's the antithesis, that's the opposite of Malchus. There's such a thing as a Memshala that will simply crumble before pressure. Malchus doesn't crumble. Malchus rises. Oh, this was very good. Alright, that's it. Absolutely. That's one of the places where that is proof to what I'm saying. That Vayakam, and I mean, we can find it in other. I'll start looking. I know that I'll find other places where the word, because the fact that they're never, I think the point we've always been making is they're never synonyms. In Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew, Biblical Hebrew, there's no such thing as two words that mean the same thing. No two words ever mean precisely the same thing. Because it's a divine language. God didn't have to give you two words to mean the same thing. Any synonyms in Tanakh always have variations of meanings. And therefore, Vayakam and Vayamod have to be two different words. One describes a physical thing, and the other describes an emotional one. Vayakam is an emotional one. Vayakam HaMelech. Oh, the shiur was kedai just for that.